Couple of weeks ago, my wife and I attended a class reunion. Susie went to a 1-8 school, little Fall Creek Heights, so over just north of Markleville, a little school that just went through eighth grade. And this was right before we consolidated Markleville, became Pendleton Heights. So the last graduating eighth grade class from this little school, which Susie was a part of, and I knew all these kids too because we went to the same high school. So after 50 years finishing there, we had a reunion a couple of weeks ago, and it was really fun. We had a great time. There was lots of good food, and we just talked and laughed and shared old memories and got caught up with each other. And, you know, there were some of the changes you would expect after 50 years. You would see people, you know, pudgy waistlines and bald heads and wrinkles. It really shocked me to see these other people looking that way. you could still, though, see the essence, something central about that person still there after all these years. But there were some other kinds of changes as well. And sometimes people didn't turn out like I may have expected them to. There were folks who became, I think, kinder, more thoughtful. People than maybe I would have guessed. That was probably judgmental on my part too. I mean, I realize it's not my place to judge whether somebody else's life has been successful, but you do sort of, here's the way I see it. I think the truth is this. We spend our whole lives becoming who we are. We're on a journey, remember? And we spend all the days and then weeks, months, years, decades of our lives becoming one kind of person or another. Now, I recognize that, again, it's not my place to make a judgment on where somebody is in that journey or how they've changed, but I think surely it's true that we're all becoming something. Now, I recognize also that sometimes, folks, as we age, we have physical problems that cause us to, even our personalities, to change a little bit sometimes. So I recognize all those things, things over which we have no control. But do you agree with me that basically we all spend our whole lives becoming who we are? It's a journey. I began a series last week that I'm calling Road Smarts, for lack of a better title, but it's about this journey then that we're on. And we Christian people, those of us who've decided to take the Jesus-led journey, have some particular ways of thinking about how this whole process of becoming who we are is supposed to work. And, we want to have a vision of where we're headed. We want to get fueled up. We want to make sure we stay on the road, and we want to keep moving. And I think this little passage from Philippians may have a thing or two to point out to us. Before I became pastor here and really got to know Newcastle, you know what my vision, my impression was? I came through town on Friday or Saturday night on Broad Street. I thought this was just a place where people went up and down, teenagers in hot rods and other kinds of cars, just going east to west and west to east and seeing each other and waving and then going back and starting and doing it again, over and over again. What am I calling this? It's cruising. And of course, we had our cruising place in Pendleton, Jimmy's Dairy Bar, and we'd cruise up to Frisch's in Anderson. So every town probably had its cruising place, but it's a ritual that I don't know if teenagers really do much of this anymore, but I think they made it against the law here, didn't they? No? It just stopped. Okay, well, I want to use that as a picture of basically a lifestyle that some people adopt. They enter a life of cruising, just going back and forth, looking for fun, trying to make sure everybody knows you're cool. The last thing you want to do as a teenager is not be cool. That's why I had such a rough time. But people spend a life that way, just burning up gas, going back and forth, and ending up basically right where they started. A journey means that there's a destination. A journey means you're going someplace. Now, what is the place to which we're headed as Christians in terms of this journey? Now, I know that the first thing that'll pop into most people's heads is heaven. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I do believe that that is our blessed hope, as we say, as Christian people, that we'll live forever with God. But I'm talking about this journey of becoming. It's a journey of character, and I want you to, at least for our purposes this morning, to think about our destination as Christ-likeness. As they say, if you want to go to heaven, the best time to do that's right now. It's not about, this journey is not so much about getting to heaven, it's about getting heaven into us. It's becoming people whose character resembles the character that we learned through the life of Jesus. That Christ, as the New Testament says, be formed in us. Now, I shared with you briefly last week that one of the best sentences I've come across for describing this whole journey comes from a guy named Bob Mulholland. He's since passed away, but he was a spiritual teacher, professor at Asbury College, I think it was then. We had a retreat with him, so I got to spend a few days listening to his teaching. And he said that this journey can be described this way. You might remember from last week. It's the process of being conformed to the image of Christ for the sake of others. It's a journey, and it's a process. A process means that it has a beginning, and it takes steps, and it ends at another place. It's a process that takes energy and time. And this Christian journey certainly takes not only our commitment to the journey itself, but also our energy and our time. Maybe another way to think of it is, I want to emphasize that the Christian life is not so much a transaction as it is transformation. We think of, you go buy a car. You pay the money for it, you get license plates, you hop in the car. That's a transaction. That's transactional. You get the car, now it belongs to you. But then you get on the highway and you just sit there, year after year. You get no place. That's a transaction. But a transformation means that the car's rolling down the road. It's getting somewhere. It sees the horizon and moves in that direction. It's about being changed because we're on this journey. The Christian life is not just about, so to speak, getting your ticket punched for heaven and then not doing anything else. It's not like, you know, in that way of thinking, you can be a mean, nasty, self-centered person, say that you believe certain things, and then become a mean, nasty, self-centered Christian. Surely that's not the point, is it? That there needs to be movement on this journey. And, you know, most of us, you know, we make some progress and then we get off on an exit and head somewhere else for a while and then we try to get back on. And we want to stay on the journey, though. The journey of being conformed to the image of Christ, a process of becoming good and just and compassionate, joyful people. who love God, what Jesus taught us, to love God with all that you are and to love your neighbor as you love yourself. That's a journey. I don't know if it's possible to start out being that way. Like I said, if you pray for patience, you get a traffic jam. If you pray for patience, you also get a nasty person in front of you pretty soon. Or for somebody who you'd rather not have to deal with. That's the journey, though. In other words, a way of thinking about this, all the parts of us that don't look like Jesus are the places where God's working on us. Just kind of chipping away at it, providing all kinds of opportunities for us to move in the right direction. You know, if maybe you're different than me, I make the wrong choice once in a while, and then I'm ashamed of myself, and I realize, well, at least I know that that wasn't the right thing, and so I go back and say I'm sorry, and I try to do better with God's help. That's the journey, isn't it? And we fail sometimes, but we stay on the road, and we encourage each other. We have a name for this. It's called discipleship, right? It's called having a spiritual life, doing practices that help us move down the road. I may have shared this with you before, but how many of you remember The Twilight Zone from the 60s? We all watched it. Everybody in here is probably at least as old as I am or close. Except Carl up there. He's the young guy here. And oh, I'm sorry, Jan. Jan wasn't even around. They were already old reruns when Jan came around. Anyway, I remember one particular episode of The Twilight Zone. My best recollection of it is this guy pulls into a town in his car to spend the night, and he checks into his little motel there, and gets up the next morning and tries to leave town and pulls away and heads out, and next thing you know, he's coming back into town. So he tries another road. He drives for a while, and where's it end up? Back in the same town. He tries every road there is, and they all end up back where he started. He is in the Twilight Zone. Christian discipleship is the way of getting out of the Twilight Zone. Because there is a way to get there. We don't have to just keep ending up the same as we always were. That there is a path to follow that will lead us out of this town that we want to leave behind and head toward the place where God wants us to be. Eva, you were probably too young to watch that, too.
No, I
don't
think.
When I was a junior in high school, my dad bought a car for me to drive. I had shared it with my older brother who was a senior, and it was, don't laugh, a 63 Rambler. And it was kind of box-shaped. It was blue with a white side panel, bucket seats, 3-speed on the floor with overdrive, you know. I remember I pulled up to a fast food one time, and the girl in there asked me if that was one of those cars that goes on land or water. Anyway, the car worked okay, and it served my purposes, and there's only one problem with it. The gas gauge didn't work. And let me tell you, I learned about that one the hard way more than once. And this was before cell phones, mind you, so, you know, you ran out of gas somewhere between Markleville and Pendleton, you might have a long walk. So I learned early on then, after a few bad experiences, that it was really wisest to keep that gas tank full even if I thought I had gas. In other words, if I was going somewhere, I'd go put a dollar's worth of gas in. You got to remember, this was 1970 or so, you know, and so you could buy 28 cents a gallon or something like that. So you could buy 4 gallons of gas for a dollar or something like that. So I would put a dollar's worth of gas in it every time I went somewhere just to make sure I could get there and get home. When we're on this spiritual journey with Jesus, we need to make sure we're fueled up. Just a verse or two before the ones that you read, Paul says something about, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection so that I might experience new life too. In other words, the same power that raised Jesus from the dead to new life is the power that God will use in our lives to make new people out of us, to give us new life. Well, how do you get that power? How do you fuel up? Well, you start by praying, because, you know, grace is, it's easy to talk about it as though it's a commodity, something that we take in our hands and then use. It's really the fruit of a relationship with God. God is grace. God's power is grace. Grace means that God is doing for us and in us what we can't do for and in ourselves. So we get fueled up by prayer. That's a great place to start, and continuing to pray and practicing the spiritual disciplines. I think Teresa mentioned a few of them this morning, praying and reading the Bible, gathering on a regular basis to worship together. This is how we get powered up. This is how grace comes to us, and we soak it up, or we let it get our tanks full so we can keep moving. And, you know, there's nothing worse than feeling like you've got this big spiritual challenge in front of you and you're out of gas. Keep fueled up. We engage in practices that put us in the place where God's power can work in us. That's what a spiritual discipline is. We're not doing it ourselves. You know, I ran out of gas. I had a car one time that wasn't running, but I had to parallel park it. And I was young enough then that I put my foot out the side of the door and kind of pushed the car back while I was steering. I wouldn't even think about doing that now. You can't do this on your own power. I'm glad those days are over. I buy new cars now whenever I can. Paul says in the Message, "I'm not saying that I have all this together that I haven't made, but I am well on my way, reaching out to Christ who has so wondrously reached out to me." You see the picture there? It's about joining hands. It's about cooperation. It's not like you say, "Okay, God, do it. Get me there." You have to cooperate. You have to take hold of that grace and let it work in your life. And that happens in the context of a relationship based on prayer. So let's let Paul have the last word here this morning. Let's keep focused on that goal. Those of us who want everything that God has for us, now that we're on the right track, let's stay on it. Amen.